Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and joining me this week to talk about the Match Day 22 action from J2 is John Steele. Hi John, how are you?
James, hi, very well, thanks. Yes, killed my first cockroach of the summer earlier this evening, so yeah, summer is coming and the football's heating up.
Yeah, congratulations. Not what I expected you to say, but let's carry on. Yes, all right, so you've chosen three games to talk about from the weekend, and starting with a big match at the top of the table. It was Sendai against Yokohama FC. This one finished Sendai 2, Yokohama 3. And Yokohama took the lead in the 5th minute through Saulo Mineiro, who managed to beat a defender and got to the ball just ahead of the goalkeeper to sort of toe-poke it in. But Sendai seemed to take control after that, and they equalised just after the hour mark through Masato Nakayama. A blocked shot fell to him standing alone because he'd had the presence of mind to move into space just before. But Yokohama FC scored two not long after that. In the 74th minute, Koki Ogawa arrived late to get in front of his defender, convert a low cross by Zane Isaka. And then 4 minutes later, Takuya Matsura scored after a pretty poor defensive play by someone, I didn't see who, trying to shepherd the ball out of play. Isaka won it and crossed for Matsura to smash it in at the near post. Then in the 89th minute, Sendai pulled one back through Foginho, a bouncing ball from a corner, which he walloped in from 12 yards, but wasn't enough, and Yokohama took the 3 points. John, this was another goal fest involving Sendai, but what can you tell us about this game?
Pulsating sort of last 20 minutes or so, wasn't it? I think it was a big boost for Yokohama FC to win this match, obviously. I know after the game, they went top of the table for the first time in a while. That didn't last long, obviously, because Niigata went back into first place on Sunday. But yeah, this was a Saturday game, so Yokohama FC went on top. I was able to watch most of this game, and I thought Sendai's team selection was a bit surprising. Obviously, for such a big game, I expected that Foginho would start, but he was on the bench. I know he's getting on a bit, but Yasushiya Endo, I thought, would have started as well. I thought this was the kind of game where you'd pick your best 11, and I think Foginho and Endo would be in my best Sendai 11. And a player that we're going to talk about a couple of times in the next couple of minutes, Kyohei Yoshino, was starting at centre-back for Sendai. I know he's listed as a defender on Sendai's website and in the J-League Meikan, but perhaps I'm a few years out of date. I always thought of him as a defensive midfielder, and I'm not sure centre-back is his best position. And I think that was proved in the 5th minute, wasn't it? Because it was Yoshino who was just too slow and not strong enough when that ball went into the kind of channel, and Saulo Mineiro beat him to it and then scored. I thought Yokohama FC's tactics after they went in front were a bit dangerous, because they just sat back on that 1-0 lead and just invited wave after wave of pressure from Sendai. I've seen Yokohama FC do this a few times. They did it in the home game against Yamagata that I went to, where they went in front and then just basically stopped playing. The only way I could describe it is it's like playing on the counter-attack, but without the counter-attack part, where they just sort of, it was like in a sort of, at half-time, I felt like tweeting, I really enjoyed that attack v defense training session. But, you know, what time does the match kick off? And of course, as you said, you know, I think defending like that is dangerous when you're only winning 1-0 against a good team. And they were made to pay with that kind of deflection in the 62nd minute. It could have gone anywhere, but it went straight to Masato Nakayama and he scored. And then all your good defensive work, you know, for 62 minutes is undone just by that one kind of chance moment. So I couldn't understand the tactics there. I think Shuhei Yamada backs his players to defend well. But in a away game against a team like Sendai, I thought it was, not the smartest idea. But, you know, they ended up winning the game because they made some good substitutions, and then they just kind of flicked on the attacking switch again. And yeah, like you said, Yokohama scored twice in 4 minutes. Koki Ogawa did brilliantly to get in front of his marker to volley in that cross from Zane Isaka. And then it was almost a very similar goal, a volley, you know, in at the near post from Matsuda 4 minutes later. I should mention it was Kyohei Yoshino who was the defender who was kind of on his heels for both goals, because Koki Ogawa got across him for the second one and Matsuda got across him again for the third. You can actually see on the third goal, as it goes into the back of net, Yoshino's kind of pounding the turf in frustration because he's been done, you know, he's been caught flat-footed in pretty much the same position twice in 5 minutes. So yeah, I think him starting at centre back was, it turned out to be a bad selection, I think. Yeah, and then the goal that came later on from Firmino, who, as I've already said, I think he should have started the game, but he slammed it in off the crossbar. It was a mistake by Sven Brodersen, the Yokohama City goalkeeper, who dropped the ball when he came to claim it from a corner. It was pretty funny. Brodersen was asking the referee for a foul, but I think he bumped into his own defender. It was Gabriel, I think, who nudged him in the back, and the ball went loose. But yeah, great win for Yokohama FC. I think you could see it was celebrations at the final whistle. They knew it was a big one. And they're 5 games unbeaten since they lost 3-0 away at Niigata, you know, a couple of match days ago. And they're only 2 points behind Niigata now. And I believe, just to jump ahead, they're actually hosting Niigata, aren't they, this weekend coming up. So everything seems to be rosy at Mitsuzawa at the moment. For Sendai, you know, one win in the last five is not great. And yeah, you can see they're only 5 points ahead of Okayama now, aren't they? And Okayama have got a game in hand, obviously. So I think for Sendai, yeah, they're just not quite, been clicking the last month or so. We know they ship a lot of goals, and that was the case here. And at Yokohama FC, even though I thought their tactics were overly negative in the first half, I thought this was a good physical battle with some naughty tackles and a few sort of coming togethers of players and handbags, as we used to call it back in the day. And it was a very enjoyable match. And my son likes Yokohama FC, so it was good for him as well. How did you see it, James?
Yeah, that's interesting. I only saw the highlights of this one, but my initial thought, the thing that stood out to me was about the Yokohama FC tactics after they took the lead. It seemed like the next set of highlights were all Sendai chances in the first half. It seemed like it was all Sendai. So it's very strange to to sit back like that, especially against the team like Sendai, who've got a very fragile defence. I had a look and it's the sixth worst in terms of goals against in J2. So it's not like you kind of have, if you get a goal, you've got to, you know, take it, and because you're not going to get any other chances. Like they've had so many high scoring matches that if you go out Sendai, you're going to score goals probably. I also noticed about this game was really good centre forward work. Like Koki Ogawa, the way he arrived late to get in front of his defender was really good. He's done that quite a few times this year, I think. And he's also good at arriving late behind a defender, which he did against Kanazawa a couple of weeks ago. So he's got 13 goals now, hasn't he? He's going really, really well. And with Nakayama, it was fortunate that the ball bounced to him. But what I liked was the way he saw that there was a massive space. And he, just before the shot was taken, he moved into it. So kind of fortunate, but also, you know, fortunate because he'd had the forethought to move into that space. And then the finish was really good. He knocked with the outside of his left foot, I think, around Brodersen, as Brodersen was sliding in towards him with his body out, stretched out wide. So it was really interesting to see the strikers do the little things that they're supposed to do, but do they do it so well and so effectively? And Zane Isaka seems to be in quite a good run of form at the moment, doesn't he? He's got 2 goals and 3 assists for the season, and it was his cross for Ogawa's goal against Kanazawa the other week, and he got the two crosses here as well for the second and third goals. But yeah, Sendai, now they're 3 points behind Yokohama FC because of this result. And I'm wondering, I don't think they're going to fall away dramatically, but I wonder if their defence is going to be their downfall in the automatic promotion race. Because it's all very well scoring two. If you concede three, that's useless, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think I saw, I can't remember the exact stats, I apologise, but it was like top, top sort of 10 goalkeepers, like saves, most saves in J2. And I think Sendai's keeper, is it Obata? He's actually quite up there in terms of saves.
Oh, yeah. Was it you who retweeted that? That would be why I saw it.
Synergy, James. Yeah. But I think that's also quite telling that, Sendai's defence has been very shaky. They've given up a lot of goals, but they've given up a lot of chances, and the keeper, Olbat, has bailed them out quite a few times. Mm. So it is something where you think halfway through the season, how much potential is then for them to tighten up the defence and kind of get things in order.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Good. Okay, let's move on to the second game then, shall we? This one was Montedio Yamagata 0, Vanfori Kofu 1. And the goal was Motoki Hasegawa. He's having a really good year, isn't he? In the 50th minute, Yamagata lost the ball in the same midfield position as they did for Iwate's second in midweek, which you'll hear about in the roundup in part two. And Yoshiki Torikai played in Hasegawa to dink over Goto. It was a really similar goal to Iwate's second the other night. I thought I was watching the same thing for a moment. It was really, really weird. So that was, Kofu's first win for ages since match day 14, actually. And Yamagata have dropped out of the playoff spots for the first time since match day 12. So, John, Yamagata 0, Kofu 1. What did you think about this one?
I think we should say, first of all, that the highlights for this game are quite brief. On the zone, so I think we can probably say first of all it wasn't a classic, so listeners might be wondering why it's propelled into the pick of the week segment. But I think for Kofu, haven't won in ages. Like I said, I think this was the first win in 8 games, so that in itself makes it sort of noteworthy, I suppose, or newsworthy. For Yamagata, they're just kind of looking a bit out of sorts at the moment, aren't they? I don't think I can really put my finger on what the problem is, but it's very rare that they don't score in a home game. So for them not to score at home is quite surprising. And I think you mentioned, we were sort of texting, again, not to spoil the roundup that's coming up later, but, in midweek, their first half display away at Iwate on Wednesday night wasn't very good. And I don't think they started particularly well here. If you watch the highlights, Kofu had 3 or 4 good chances in the first half to go in front. I think Goto made a really good save from William Lira about 10 minutes before half-time, which could have been an opener. And they were just sort of cut open a bit too easily, weren't they, for the goal? Taiki Kato, a player I really like, but he gave it away. But I think even then, they should have been able to close ranks and defend the situation a little bit better. Good pass from Torikai, and Hasegawa, beautiful finish. I mean, he's a player that just wasn't really on my radar until this season, I don't think. But he has got the captain's armband at Kofu, and he really is the guy that makes them tick. I think if he's playing well, then Kofu always look a bit more dangerous, a bit more likely to score. I thought Yamagata might have got a draw. Thiago Alves should have given the keeper no chance when he was clean through, but he just put the ball at a nice height for the keeper, Kawata, to push it away. And Kato, wasn't his day, was it? He volleyed over from about 6 yards when he looked easier to hit the target. So they could have got a draw, but I think if you don't score and you give a goal away, you can't have too many complaints when you don't get any points. So I think for Yamagata, there is some pondering to do, because I looked at their last 9 matches, and I think they've only got 3 wins in that time against Tochigi, Yamaguchi and Ryukyu, all teams that are kind of either down at the bottom or out of form at the moment. So nothing to get excited about there. I know they've been missing Riku Handa, who's been away with Japan's under-23s. Possibly 1 or 2, maybe another player as well, who's escaped my memory. But even with him missing, I think they should have been able to perform a bit better and get better results than they have recently. So yeah, it's a bit worrying for them. And even Kofu, I actually thought they'd been doing okay recently, but when I looked at their record of no wins in the last 7 and winning this game narrowly, then I think I'm wrong. And we might be in a situation where neither of these teams is in the playoffs, where I think pre-season I would have gambled at least one of them would be. What do you think, James? Is that a bit too pessimistic? Or
it's strange. Yeah, Yamagata, we kind of saw this a little bit last year after Klamovsky took over. They had that fantastic run, didn't they, where they went on 11 game unbeaten run or winning run or something like that, but then they went back to being really inconsistent and they fell away in the later stage of the season. And this year, okay, they haven't had that kind of fantastic unbeaten run, maybe, but they've been up in the playoff spots. And then Now, the two wins from the last eight isn't great, and stuttering a bit. But they do have the talent, even without Hando. They've still got loads and loads of really talented players. So I'm surprised that they've been struggling as they have been. Although not struggling massively, but still. I wonder if they can turn it around. As for Kolfu, I was saying to you earlier before we started recording that we haven't really spoken about them this year. I think only once they've been talked about on the pod, and that's because they just haven't done anything. The most notable thing they've done is have a run of five consecutive 1-1 draws, which was part of that seven-game winless streak that you mentioned just now. But it's strange because they always seem like a team that's like there or thereabouts. But they've since they came down from J1, they finished ninth, fifth, fourth, and third. This year, I wonder if something's missing. I don't know what's changed, apart from the manager, I suppose. But I don't know if that's the only reason why they're having this kind of season. And is it? It's not too late for them to turn it around. But will they be able to push up the table, or are they going to end up staying in 10th?
I think Bruno Paraiba's out injured at the moment, isn't he, for a couple of months. So they are missing one kind of flair player up front, but I don't think he's actually been that impressive either, like you said, like the rest of the team. So yeah, perhaps he's not there. They're missing it. They're not using the centre back Riohe Arai these days, because he's had some off the pitch extramarital issues, I think is perhaps the way we can put it. So he's on the naughty step. But I'm not sure. They just seem a bit. When I watch them, they are just lacking something. And I think if they get all their ducks in a row and do really well, they might sneak into fifth or sixth. But even then, I wouldn't be very confident about them. Getting through the playoffs, to be honest.
Yeah, it's strange that they've got William Lira and Motoki Hasegawa has been brilliant this year, but they're not sure they've got much else. In this game, I thought, though, both keepers were really good. Goto for Yamagata and Kawata for Kofu. Both pulled off quite a few really good saves when they were called on. Goto was called on more than Kawata. It's interesting. So we're just over halfway through, so there's still plenty of time. These teams to turn it around in Yamagata's case, or to get going in Kofu's case, but whether they will be able to or not remains to be seen.
I suppose we've got the transfer window coming up. That could be an interesting of 4 or 5 weeks, couldn't it, for Kofu especially?
Yeah, and whether they're gonna just bring in a few, or they're gonna panic and bring in loads, which I imagine some of the teams lower down the table will.
Who could you be thinking of, James? The team that plays in orange, by any chance?
Yeah, well, not just them. There's a few teams that I think are going to get panicky and sign a whole bunch of players. Speaking of teams down the bottom, should we go on to our third game?
Yes.
Yeah, I was asking you. That wasn't rhetorical.
I'd given you the perfect link, I thought. I was like, take it away.
Yeah, sorry, I ruined it. No. I'll leave this bit in though, so the listeners can get a glance.
They need to know we're human, James.
Yeah.
Yes.
I need a quick warning for the listeners. Please sit down, and if you're driving, maybe you should pull over, because Tokushima Vortis did not draw at the weekend. In fact, they lost 1-0 away to Iwate, thanks to a 77th minute goal from Hayata Komats, who he chested down a cross but lost possession in the box, but somehow the ball fell kindly for him to have another go, and he scored from about 6 yards or so, and gave Iwate another important 3 points. John, I know you and Stu talked about Tokushima a lot last week. I'm guessing that this match basically proved a lot of what you talked about, really.
Yeah, I don't think anyone from Tokushima listened to our chat or used it as sort of like dressing room motivation, put it on the stereo in the dressing room before the game. I thought We'll talk about Iwate in a moment, because this was a kind of second really good performance from them in the space of about 4 days, wasn't it? But from a Tokushima point of view, I thought this was really flat and uninspiring, disappointing performance from them. I think they'll be absolutely desperate to get Shota Fujio back into the squad and integrated after he comes back from his national team duty at the Asian Cup this week. The first half was kind of like as nailed on a 0-0 draw as you could probably get. I think the only real excitement in that first 45 minutes was when Tokushima's goalkeeper Suarez sort of rescued himself. He kind of made a bit of a back punch out to the edge of the box, and he recovered to kind of palm away the shot that came in afterwards from, I think, Yuge is the player that took the shot. Then earlier on in the second half, I thought Tokushima had their warning, because Morolato kind of got free in the box and should have scored, but put the ball wide. But then the goal, when it did come, was kind of, I'm going to sound like Alan Hansen on sort of mid-90s match of the day here, but, you know, Tokushima didn't really do enough to stop a cross coming into the box. Then they had a chance to clear and they didn't. They had another chance to clear and they didn't. And then they still had the nerve to look surprised when the ball ended up in the back of the net from Komatsu. And it's like, you know, even in J2, you can't get away. You can't miss two chances to clear the ball inside your own penalty area. I thought especially number six for Tokushima just like seemed to try to dribble it out of his own six-yard box at one point. What are you doing? But anyway, yeah, that was the goal. And that felt like, as I said, I thought this game looked like a nailed-on 0-0. So once somebody managed to actually score, it looked like a nailed-on 1-0. There was just time for Suarez to kind of correct one more error. He thought he was in danger of picking up a back pass, so he took a heavy touch to control it instead, and it nearly left an onrushing Iwate play with an open goal. But he's like Superman, isn't he, Suarez? He somehow managed to block that chance as well. So I don't know if a goalkeeper makes two mistakes, but you know, rights them both, as he had a good game or not. I'd have to say he has had a good game there. Great result for Iwate. And I think I said to you beforehand, this sounds very negative, but I mean it as a compliment. I think they brought Tokushima down to their level very easily. And I think that they made it a real battle, and they ground out a 1-0 win. And, you know, based on the fact that they let in that late equaliser against Yamagata in midweek, we could be talking about a world where Iwate picked up 6 points in 4 days. And as it is, they've got 4 points from the two matches they've had in the last couple of days. But that's pretty good going, isn't it? They're unbeaten in four, two wins and two draws from the last four games, and suddenly they're level on points with Omiya at the bottom. And after looking dead and buried a few weeks ago, it's back on for them, isn't it? For Tokushima, I mean, 8 points off the playoffs, which doesn't sound too bad, but performance-wise, they don't look like top six material at all, do they? I believe the last time they won a game was in Golden Week against the FC Chiba. So they really need, we were talking in the sort of green room before recording, James, I'm not sure what their kind of expectations are for this season, but I'm pretty sure being sort of 16th or 17th at halfway wasn't in the script. But I don't know what you think.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that was not their plan. I'm sure they're not planning to have such a strange season, really. I think maybe they did listen to you and Stu last week and just go, yeah, they're right, oh well. Because there was nothing that seemed to suggest any kind of change from previous matches. So you talked about Ichimi needing to kind of lead their attack. And from the highlights of this, he had three chances, although two of them were shots from the edge of the area that were blocked by defenders standing about 2 metres in front of him. The other one was a header from a corner that went over. So obviously he can't do it all on his own, and obviously no one else produced anything either, otherwise it would have been in the highlights package. But it's not enough. Maybe he needs better decision making if he's to be the lead attacker, plus he needs more support from the others. And we know that Tokushima have got decent attackers, but they're not doing enough collectively. The defence is doing all right, and Suarez is doing excellently. He's got to be the best goalie in the league, surely, this season, just on defence, you know, in terms of goals against and in terms of some of the spectacular saves he's pulling off. Okay, sometimes it's because he has to correct his own mistakes, but still, a lot of keepers make mistakes and concede goals from them.
Well, just at the end of the highlights, there was a moment where he Suarez was kind of on the halfway line sweeping up a loose ball, and it looked like he was just going to say like fuck it and just like start dribbling it himself. Like he dribbled it about 10 yards inside the Huerta half, and I was like, do you know what, you may as well go yourself at this point. Yeah, so yeah, yeah, I think he's definitely the standout player for them this year.
Yeah, and it's strange. They're in 16th, and it's not unfeasible for them to reach the playoffs, but it seems really unlikely the way they have been playing up to this point. And they're actually now only 3 points off relegation. So I'm wondering if that's a real danger.
Well, I think if you take Suarez's saves and big performances out of that team, they probably would have three fewer points this season and be in real trouble. So it's a difficult one, and teams that come down from J1, like you said before we started recording, they often have a difficult adjustment when they come down. But I would just be worried. You know, the front office will only have a limited patience, I think, with Danny Poyatos / Potatoes.
You had to stop and think about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I was like, is it wrong to make fun of his name? It probably is, but it's funny. So, yeah. I just don't know. I think something that sometimes happens as well is Tokushima might be quite happy to keep him as manager, but their teams below them are sort of like firing managers and replacing managers now. And that sometimes leads to a bit of pressure internally for, usually from people involved, perhaps high up in the club that don't know much about football, but they're like, well, you know, the other teams are changing their managers, maybe we should change our manager as well. We'll see. I think he's got more time, to be honest. It's not inspiring stuff that they're producing right now, I don't think.
No. And Iwate, I think, since they lost to Kanazawa a few weeks or like 1 month ago, I think, I was at that game, and they were actually pretty good in the second half, and maybe unfortunate to lose. They've beaten Kofu and Tokushima 1-0. They've drawn 3-3 with Yamagata and 2-2 with Verdy, coming back from 2-0 down. They've been putting in some impressive performances. What was interesting in this game for me was that they had no Bismarck, who I think was suspended, no Brenner, and no Otabo, who was really good on Wednesday night. But they still managed to get the job done in this case. And I think it's a huge win for them, because although they're still 21st, now, like I think you mentioned, that they're equal on points with Omiya. And now, also, they're only 1 point off Tochigi and Gunma.
Yes, and I believe they're going to come up against Tochigi, right, at the weekend. So the situation could look even more different on sort of Sunday evening.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting. Well, it might not be an interesting match to watch, but it'll be interesting to see the result afterwards.
big hashtag big boy football.
Yeah. All right. Good. I think that'll do for part one. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think we've upset and offended enough managers and players there. But let's have the listeners hear your roundup of the rest of the action, and let's talk about the weekend games.
Okay, all right, be back in a sec then. Let's run through the rest of the weekend's action. But before we do that, there was one rearranged game last Wednesday, the round 16 match between Iwate Gruja Morioka and Monterio Yamagata. Iwate started strongly and almost took the lead in the 12th minute when Otabo dispossessed Kosuke Yamazaki on the edge of the Yamagata box, only to see his shot cannon back off the crossbar. The hosts were in front soon after, though, when Masahito Onoda cut back from the byline and fired a shot past Masaaki Goto from a tight angle. It was 1-0 at half-time, a lacklustre half from Yamagata and a very good one from Iwate. 5 minutes into the second half, Yamagata equalised. Takuto Minami made contact with Rui Yokoyama in the area, the referee gave a penalty, and Yokoyama converted. Iwate went ahead again soon after, thanks to yet more dozy defending, this time from Takumi Yamada, whose back pass was dreadfully underhit, but perfect for Yohei Okuyama to nip in and chip over Goto. Soon after that, it was 3-1.
Substitute Brendner's shot hit a defender and looped over the despairing Goto for his second goal of the season. With that two-goal lead and 23 minutes to play, Iwate must have felt they were on course for an impressive and important 3 points. But when you're near the bottom, things rarely work out that way. And so it proved. 1 minute later, substitute Kota Yamada met Ryota Matsumoto's cross with his left foot on the edge of the area to make it 3-2, although Kenta Matsuyama will be annoyed that he didn't save it. That goal set up a feisty final 20 minutes, with Thiago Alves elbowing Bismarck in the ribs when he was in midair, then having a go at him while he was prone on the turf. And while that was going on, Yamagata substitute De La Torre did something to leave Kentaro Kai in a heap on the touchline, a spark a bit of an altercation among the coaching staffs of both teams. There was also an acrobatic save by Goto from a Daisuke Fukagawa free kick. All that meant 6 minutes added on, and in the third of those minutes, Iwate couldn't clear a cross, and eventually De La Torre was able to sweep in the equaliser. 3-3 the final score. On reflection, a good point for Iwate to widen the gap to 4 points to bottom place Ryukyu, but disappointing to drop 2 points and a two-goal lead. Yamagata, meanwhile, stayed in fifth. Now let's move on to the weekend's games, starting with the league leaders Albirex Niigata, who won 3-0 against Blaublitz Akita side depleted by injuries. Eitaro Matsuda headed Niigata into the lead after a quarter of an hour when Shion Honma just managed to keep the ball in play and cross after a corner. Daichi Tagami saw a header come back off the Akita crossbar in the 53rd minute, and Akita's best chance came just after the hour mark when a long punt forward by keeper Yoshiaki Arai found Ibuki Yoshida, whose cross was cut out by Michael James. Arai made a superb save in the 76th minute, diving to pluck the ball off the toes of Matsuda when one-on-one. Yosuke Mikami shot just wide for Akita in the 89th minute, but then two late Niigata goals finished them off. First, Akita's Kaito Chida slipped to give Shion Honma the ball, and he laid it on a plate for Kazuyoshi Shimabuku to score. Then, in the 92nd minute, Shimabuku gained possession in his own area, dribbled up to the edge of the Akita area, and played a pass to Ryoto Ito, who lobbed Arai to make it 3-0. Niigata are 3 points clear at the top, and look unstoppable, unbeaten in seven. Akita are 15th, winless in six, and will be hoping for quick returns from their injured cohort. Viva and Nagasaki won for the third consecutive game, and for the first time at home since the 27th of April. They beat Zaspa Kasatsu Gunma 2-0. Asahi Uenaka got the first in the 10th minute after good passing between Masaru Kato and Yuya Kuwasaki allowed the latter to cross for Uenaka to score what looked an easy goal as he peeled away from his marker. Koya Okuda hit the post for Nagasaki a few minutes later after a long run, and Edgar Jr. made it 2-0 inside half an hour when he managed to bring down a high pass just inside the area while sandwiched between two Gunma defenders, and his touch completely wrong-footed the advancing Masatoshi Kushibiki, leaving Edgar with an empty net and several foolish-looking Gunma players. Nagasaki had to play the last 36 minutes with 10 men as Yusei Egawa received a straight red card for bundling over Shunpei Fukahori as the last defender. Well, they saw out the rest of the game with little difficulty, aside from one direct free kick, which Masaya Tomizawa tipped over the bar. Nagasaki finding form in time for the arrival of their new manager. Gunma's good start to the season now a distant memory. They're 18th, winless in six, and only 1 point above the relegation zone. Machida Zelvia are a point behind Nagasaki in sixth, thanks to a stoppage time winner from Shusuke Ota, which gave them a 3-2 win over Tsuegen Kanazawa. It was Ota who scored first, too. In the 8th minute, he met a cross from the left with the outside of his right foot and it went in off the bar. Yohei Toyoda equalised in the 37th minute from Kanazawa's first real attack. Keita Fujimura played Riku Matsuda into space down the right and he crossed for Toyoda to head back across the goal. A goal which meant Toyoda moved up to 8th on the all-time J-League goalscorers list. Dudu put Machida back in front just after the hour mark as he turned a defender and shot past Yuto Shirai. Kanazawa made 4 changes in the 67th minute and they all played a part in Kanazawa's second goal a few minutes later. Strong work from Shunya Mori on the left, played in Masamichi Hayashi, whose cross went past Kyohei Sugiura, who'd drawn the defender's attention to the near post, and found Ryuhei Oishi arriving alone at the far post. But Ota had the last word as he took advantage of a defensive lapse in the 92nd minute to grab his second of the night. Fagiano Okayama extended their unbeaten run to 6 games with a 1-0 win over bottom club FC Ryukyu, who once again conceded a late goal. I make this the 12th goal they've let in after the 75th minute of games this season. Okayama's goalkeeper Daiki Hotta was busy in the first half with saves from Katsuya Nakano and Kelvin, and Makito Uehara headed just wide for Ryukyu in the 84th minute. And it seemed like they'd done enough to keep Okayama at bay without too much in the way of goal-scoring opportunities against them, but in the 93rd minute, Hotta launched a long free kick from the halfway line, Yosuke Kawai crossed from the right, Yasutaka Yanagi headed it down, and Kiwara Miyazaki's shot found its way in via a deflection of a defender's body and keeper Junto Taguchi's hand. The other notable moment in this game was a member of the Okayama coaching staff getting a yellow card for a huge overreaction to a free kick being given against his side, even going so far as to enter the pitch and berate the referee. Nevertheless, Okayama are just 5 points off Sendai in third, while Ryukyu are 7 points adrift at the bottom. John and I already talked about Iwate's match, and the other team that's 7 points ahead of Ryukyu is Omiya Ardija. They continued their reasonable form under new manager Naoki Soma with a 1-1 draw away to Jeff United. Ryo Shinzato headed Omiya into the lead in the 17th minute. A corner found its way to the back post and was headed back across for Shinzato to score. Jeff were level just before half-time. A perfect cross from the left by Tomoya Miki was headed in by Solomon Sakuragawa. The teams traded chances in the second half, but neither could find the winner. Jeff sit in 8th place, unbeaten in 6 games now. Level on points with Jeff, and one place below are Ruaso Kumamoto, who extended their unbeaten run to 7 games with a 0-0 draw against Mito Hollyhock. Despite the scoreline, there were plenty of chances in this one. Toshiki Takahashi forced a good save from Mito's Lui Yamaguchi early on, while Shun Ito also went close for Kumamoto in the first half. In between, a free kick from Yuto Hiratsuka had Kumamoto's goalie Yuya Sato clattering into the post again. I have a feeling this is going to become a regular feature of the pod. Sato made a good reaction save in first half stoppage time, then Yamaguchi was called on several times early in the second half. Mito continued to move up the table gradually after their slow start. They're 13th now. Hiroshi Jofuku got off to the perfect start as manager of Tokyo Verdy as his new team dispatched Reno for Yamaguchi 3-0. Things were made easier for them when Yamaguchi defender Hennan pulled Ryoga Sato's shirt inside the penalty area in the 22nd minute, earning a straight red card and conceding a penalty, which Sato scored 3 minutes later. After that, it was predictably all Verdy, but perhaps unverdily, they finished the job with 2 late goals. In the 80th minute, a corner was headed on to Junki Koike at the back post, and then 2 minutes later, Sato got his second, turning in a Daiki Fukazawa cross. This was Verdy's first league win since the 4th of May, and their first clean sheet since a 1-0 win over Oita Trinita on the 3rd of April. Speaking of Oita, they saw Tochigi do to them what so many other teams have done to Tochigi this season, and they conceded a late stoppage time goal to drop points. Oita almost got an early lead, but the ball rolled along the goal line before being cleared, and Tochigi had the ball in the net first, but it was ruled out for offside. Oita did take the lead though, 10 minutes into the second half, when Kento Haneda met a high free kick with his head, having turned his marker around completely. Tochigi pushed forward in the final 15 minutes and finally got their reward in the 4th minute of additional time. Ryo Nemoto's shot from distance appeared to take a deflection and left Oita keeper Shun Takagi with no chance. I say appeared to take a deflection because the camera angles on the replay were really unhelpful. Anyway, a vital point for Tochigi, who have only scored more than one goal in a game twice this year. They'll have to keep eking out the results like these in low-scoring games. Oita, meanwhile, are 12th and still haven't really got going yet. Well, that's all the action from the weekend taken care of. I'll be back in a moment with John to preview this week's fixtures. All right, welcome back, everyone. John's come back, and he's going to help me preview fixtures coming up. And actually, there are games involving several J2 teams on Wednesday night in the third round of the Emperor's Cup. 14 J2 teams all taking on J1 opponents. I won't run through the fixtures now, but John and I will put out a review at some point, although the games would already have been played by the time this pod goes out anyway. And I can promise you that our Cup episode will be as well planned and executed as the JFA's actual Cup competition. And let's move on to the actual J2 matches coming up on Saturday the 25th of June. There are 4 matches, and the rest are on Sunday the 26th. On Saturday at 4 o'clock,
Sendai play Yamagata. Then at 6 o'clock, Mito take on Okayama. And in two games at 7 o'clock, Nagasaki against Akita and Kumamoto against Oita. John, any games that look good for you on Saturday?
Yeah, I think Sendai Yamagata could be interesting. Obviously, it's third against seventh going into the sort of with the current league table. Two kind of Tohoku based teams, so quite close together geographically. And they're both kind of out of form, aren't they? I think, you know, Yamagata, no win, one win in the last five, is it? And Sendai, similar. So I think both of those teams will go into that game short of confidence, but in need of the win. So it could be interesting. And by extension, Mito against Okayama at 6 o'clock. Well, if Okayama can win that game and Sendai lose earlier at home to Yamagata, well, then the gap between third and fourth, Sendai and Okayama, will be down to just 2 points. And then I think we've got a kind of top six kind of bunch together again after it seemed like Sendai might be one of the teams to pull away. So I think that's interesting. Nagasaki against Akita. I'm not sure if Nagasaki's new manager, Bruno Carrile, is going to be in the technical area or not. Whether that will add some kind of interest to that game, I'm not sure. And Kumamoto Oita is a Kyushu derby, I think, at least geographically speaking. So I'm sure there'll be some pride on the line in that one as well.
Yeah, that's good. You ran through all of those, so I don't have to say anything. Let's move on to Sunday. The first match is at the heat stroke inducing time of 2 o'clock. Jeff United play Tokyo Verdy. And then the other matches are all in the evening, thankfully. There are three at 6 o'clock, and they're all big ones. Tochigi against Iwate, Yokohama FC against Niigata, and Tokushima against Gunma. Then at 6:30, Ryukyu play Machida. And at 7 o'clock, Omiya play Kanazawa and Yamaguchi play Kofu. So, John, I think it's pretty obvious which ones you're going to pick from Sunday. Let's go through the motions anyway.
Yeah, it's too easy, isn't it? I think first of all, yeah, you're right to mention that 2 p.m. Jeff Chibi against Tokyo Verdy. I mean, athlete's foot cream and antifungal cream sales will be skyrocketing. The sweaty feet, and that's probably just the fans at that one. Yeah, 2 p.m. is a rude time to have a match in late June, I think. But yeah, Yokohama FC against Niigata. Well, I think, you know, Yokohama's game against Sendai was kind of like a sort of, you know, on some levels it was kind of a game of the season so far, at least for the teams involved. And I think this has the potential to be similar. Obviously, if Yokohama FC can win, they'll go above Niigata right in the table, so into first place. But Niigata in great form at the moment, and it's only last month that they beat Yokohama 3-0 at the Big Swan. So I think there is a lot riding on that game, and it could be a very interesting one. And yeah, all at the same time, 6 p.m. Tochigi against Iwate. Yeah, if you want glamour, it's best to look elsewhere. But this will be a good battle, I think. Tochigi know how to grind out results. So do Iwate, at least in the last few games. It's 19th against 21st, and there's only 1 point between them. So you almost wonder if the way that Tochigi approached the game, they might be happy to take a point. Mm. And Iwate will be going to try and get all three. But it's going to be an interesting match, that one, and an acquired taste, you feel.
Yeah. I think Tokushima Gunma will be interesting as well, because I mentioned earlier there's only 3 points between them now. So if Gunma win that, they can drag Tokushima right back, well, not back down, but they can drag them down into the mess at the bottom. Mm. And, also, Ryukyu Machida, because Ryukyu's attack is not bad, and you and Stu mentioned about Machida's defence not being great, and then we saw on Sunday night they conceded two goals to pretty much Kanazawa's only two chances, although they still managed to win because they can score late goals. And if there's one thing that Ryukyu can do better than attack, it's concede late goals. So that one might be worth keeping an eye on as well.
But I think, you know, Stu and I also agreed that Kumamoto Mito would be a goal fest last weekend, that it was 0-0. So we get it wrong sometimes. But
you should never say out loud that you think a Mito game is going to be a goal fest, because they always end 0-0.
Yeah, I'm blaming it on Kosuke Kinoshita having his extra one match ban. From kicking the advertising hoarding against Omiya. But I mean, hopefully there'll be goals aplenty coming up soon.
Don't mention that again, because people will get upset all over again about it.
So hooliganism.
Yeah. All right. Let's end on that note, shall we? Thanks, John. It was nice to chat to you and get your thoughts on all these J2 matches.
Yeah, you too, James. Yeah, pleasure.
And thanks everyone for listening, and thanks for downloading and sharing and retweeting and all those kind of things. Thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We really appreciate that. And don't go anywhere, because Magic Mike Innes is coming up with all the latest from J3 in J-Talk Short Corner. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on all the J3 matches played over the last few days, as well as previewing the round 14 games coming up this weekend. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. A couple of loan transfers to report on, both deals lasting through to the end of the season. High-flying Iwaki FC receive a further boost with the signing of 23-year-old defender Ryo Endo from Albirex Niigata, while Stibia Ebs Mikani, 24, and a centre-back or left-back, moves from Mito Hollyhock to strengthen the squad at FC Gifu. The J-League have announced the winners of the Player, Coach and Goal of the Month awards for May. The first two reflect Kagoshima United's position among the promotion challengers, as Corki Arita takes the Player Prize and Naoto Otake is named Coach of the Month. The goal choice is Yuki Oshitani's beautiful chip over the keeper for Fujieda My FC against FC Gifu in round 8. Congratulations to all concerned. Now onto the action, and last Wednesday, the 15th of June, saw the rearranged round 8 game between Vanrare Hachinohe and SC Sagamihara. The improving visitors were unchanged from their victory at Imabari, potent new striker Takumi Kato continuing to lead the line. As for Vanrare, Junichiro Azuma was in temporary charge following the departure of Masahiro Kuzuno, with new coach Ryo Shigaki due to take over for the weekend game against Nagano. Azuma made 8 changes from the defeat to Tottori, and those changes quickly paid dividends, as in only the 7th minute, Koichi Miyao swung in a free kick, Teppei Chikaishi hit it back into the box after a half clearance, and Takeru Itakura scrambled it over the line. Chikaishi went off injured only a couple of minutes later, but midway through the first half, Hachinohe extended their lead. Kazuya Niwa crossing from the left, Takumi Shimada beating Yudai Fujiwara to a header, which bounced back off the post for Shimada to fire in. A first goal of the season for the 25-year-old, and was he pleased about it? Also, by the by, the first time this year Vanrare have scored more than once in a game. Sagamihara moved onto the front foot, forcing a great save by Kazuki Hattori when Riku Tanaka sent in a cross, and that man Kato easily beat Kazuki Sato to power in a header. Midway through the second half, Kato reduced the deficit with his 3rd in 3 games. A fantastic piece of skill as he tracked Kordai Minoda's long ball into the box, waited for it to drop, and hammered a first-time volley past Hattori. The visitors continued to press but couldn't get an equaliser, and it ended Hachinohe 2, Sagamihara 1. A glimpse of Vanrare as a better side than their league position suggests. Sagamihara not able to sustain their improvement into a midweek away game. J-Talk Extra Time. Then, over the weekend, the season moved on to round 13 with 4 games on Saturday the 18th. Kagoshima United bounced back from their loss to FC Gifu in the last match, easing past bottom side YSCC Yokohama at the Shiranami Stadium. Nei Yonezawa gave Kagoshima the lead in the 12th minute, latching on to a misplaced pass by YSCC's Kei Munechika and firing in a shot that Ryo Ishii just managed to tip onto the post, but the ball came straight back to Yonezawa, who converted the rebound for his 6th of the season. The home team took advantage of a further defensive slip-up to go 2-0 ahead on 33 minutes. Kento Dorate failing to cut out Shosei Okamoto's knockback from an Atsuki Satsukawa cross, Frank Romero making no mistake with a simple finish. YSCC's Shuntaro Kawabe had a couple of chances to pull one back before half-time, first when he got away from Kota Hoshi and brought the save out of Fuma Shirasaka, then when he again eluded Hoshi but shot wildly when through on goal. Shirasaka once more kept the visitors at bay on the hour when he dived to keep out Dodate's shot from the edge of the box, and Kagoshima's win was confirmed with 15 minutes left, Satsukawa getting on the end of a corner to the far post and knocking it back into the danger area. Ishii parried Frank Romero's header, but the ball struck the visitors' Akio Yoshida and rebounded back over the line for an own goal. Credit to the away side, they did keep going, and Kawabe had his nearest miss of the match in the 85th minute, hitting the post after being set up by Dodate, but the game ended Kagoshima 3, YSCC 0. The home side's attacking quality giving them the points. For YSCC, glimpses of individual skill, but not much progress yet under Kei Hoshikawa. That win for Kagoshima put clear daylight between them and Matsumoto Yamaga, who, despite the return as a substitute of under-19 international starlet Ayumu Yokoyama, fell to their second loss of the season in a cracker at Ehime FC. Mighty Mikan's coach Kiyotaka Ishimaru went for experience, starting with 6 players aged 30 or over, and one of them, Riki Matsuda, gave his side the lead in the 27th minute when Yamaga's Ryo Toyama made a mess of the offside trap. Kohei Shin got on the end of Ryo Sato's elegant through pass and crossed for Matsuda to finish in style. Hiroshi Nanami's promotion-chasing Matsumoto pulled level 6 minutes after the restart when Takayuki Mae switched play from right to left. Toyama chested it down and laid the ball back to the edge of the box, and Yokoyama, left in clear open space by the home defence, swept in a peach of a goal with his left foot. The stage looked set for Yamaga to go on and take the points, but with 20 minutes left, Yuya Ono brought down one of Ehime's veterans, Shigeru Yokotani, and the 30-yard free kick was duly buried by Shunsuke Motegi, who sent his shot over the jumping wall and beyond the reach of Victor. And 10 minutes later, the home side went further ahead with perhaps the goal of the game, Matsuda feeding Takumi Sasagi, who skipped away from Ono and into space before swivelling and lashing it past Victor from 25 yards. Not that that was the end of the scoring, as in injury time, Matsumoto pulled one back in bewildering circumstances, Shaw Sumida sending across to the far post where Taiki Miyabe scrambled in a shot that Kenta Tokushige appeared to block. The loose ball was swiped at by home defender Reiya Morishita and span back over the line. Definitely a goal, but the award of it to Miyabe rather than an own goal seems doubtful. Still, tremendous entertainment. Final score, Ehime 3, Matsumoto 2. The home side demonstrating how they can perform at this level, and Matsuda's best match since joining the club. Yamaga made mistakes, but won't concede many goals this season better than those scored by Ehime. Fukushima United slipped to 7th in the table and FC Gifu passed them in the other direction, climbing to 5th as a result of Gifu's win at the Toho Minnano Stadium. The game's key moment came in the 33rd minute when Yosuke Kashiwagi swung in a cross following a short corner and Ryotaro Onishi beat Kazuki Dohana to the ball to half-volley it into the corner. The home side had two chances to rescue a point in the latter stages, first when Junya Takahashi sneaked behind Kazuya Okamura to get on the end of Ryota Kitamura's cross, only to head just wide, then when Dohana and Kosuke Tanaka combined to set up Uheiji Uehata, whose brilliantly struck 20-yard shot beat Takuya Matsumoto and crashed against the post. Final score, Fukushima 0, Gifu 1. No wins, one goal, 2 points for Fukushima in the last four games now. Gifu have had their underwhelming performances, but 14 points from 6 games under Yuji Yokoyama is promotion for. Only a week ago, I commented that SC Sagamihara had their mojo back under Norihiro Satsukawa, but the Green and Blacks followed their midweek defeat at Hachinohe by losing at home to Kamatamare Sanuki. A deserved win it was too for the Noodle Boys, who took the lead midway through the first half. A Hayato Hasegawa free kick awarded for a foul by Yudai Fujiwara on Kohei Matsumoto. Kentaro Kakoi looked tentative in his attempts to keep out Hasegawa's kick, which sneaked inside the post. A first ever J-League goal for the 24-year-old. Kamatamare rookie Mizuki Uchida was a thorn in the left-hand side of the home defence, 2 minutes before the break embarking on a mazy dribble laced with trickery that turned Kyota Mochi inside out and back again before shooting just wide. And in the second half, Senuki several times came close to a second goal, Matsumoto indeed having a header ruled out for offside following Takuma Goto's corner and Kanta Usui's deft chip back into the box. Uchida set up Masataka Nishimoto for a shot that drew a spectacular near-post save from Kakoi, and from the resulting corner, Usui's cross was glanced onto the post by Kentaro Shigematsu. The closest Sagamihana came to a goal was in the 54th minute, Tsubasa Ando's drive being blocked by Hasegawa and falling to Takumi Kato, whose powerful snapshot was superbly saved by Takuya Takahashi. There was no further scoring though, and the game ended Sagamihana 0, Seneki 1. What a difference a week makes for Sagamihara, and not in a good way. While for Kamatamari, this looked like the most positive performance for a long time. Then on Sunday the 19th, matters improved yet more for Kagoshima when Iwaki FC dropped points via a home draw with Giravants Kitakyushu. It was all looking good for the J-League new boys, who took the lead in the 65th minute, Kyowan Hoshi's long ball out of defence being flicked on by substitute Daiki Yamaguchi for Hiroto Iwabuchi, who ran on and chipped it confidently round Yuya Tanaka. And then, 8 minutes later, Riku Saga received the ball in space from Iwabuchi, stepped away from Yuki Nakayama and fired in a left-foot shot that deflected off Hiroki Maeda and past Tanaka. 2-0 and cruising against goal-shy opposition, or so it seemed, as in the 78th minute, on a counter-attack, Nobuki Iketaka put a cross beyond Rei Ieizumi to set up Yuya Takezawa for a header that made it 2-1. And in injury time, again on the break, Zen Cardona reached the byline and crossed to the far post for Takezawa to head in again. Final score, Iwaki 2, Kitakyushu 2. Poor game management, letting down Iwaki, whose coach Hiromasa Suguri did not look happy. Giramance have tumbled down the table thanks to missed chances galore over the last 2 months, but here picked up a welcome away point. In form, Katare Toyama experienced a frustrating afternoon in their, let's call it, low-key home game with Azul Claro Numazu, but with the match in injury time and very much heading for a goalless draw, Hiroyasu Sueki got his head to a loose ball in midfield and nodded it forward for one of J3's forgotten men, Yohei Ono, who got free from Yuya Tsukegi, let the ball bounce once, and hammered a volley past Hiromu Musha. Final score, Toyama 1, Numazu 0. Another less than brilliant performance from Katare, but they keep grinding out the wins. Azul Claro must have hoped they'd done enough for a precious point, but never threatened and can have no real complaints. AC Nagano Parseiro hosted Vanrare Hachinohe, with Ryo Shigaki taking charge of the away team for the first time. Not a great performance by Vanrare, although they did take the lead 7 minutes before half-time when Koichi Miyao floated in a free kick. Naoyuki Yamada headed it on, and the ball flicked off Keita Yoshioka and in for an own goal. After that, Hachinohe offered little, and the home side drew level almost immediately. It stemmed from a Masaki Miyasaka corner kick that was headed back across goal by Yoshioka. Takuya Miyamoto beat Yamada to guide the ball to rookie Leo Yamanaka for a close-range finish. The winning goal came in the 57th minute, the Vanrare defence unable to clear, and Yuki Morikawa laid it off for Miyasaka 20 yards out to shoot through a crowd of players and into the bottom corner. Soon afterwards, Nagano's Yuta Sato had a goal disallowed for offside after he flicked home a near-post cross from Yuma Funabashi back in the team after injury. But the most dramatic aspect of the closing stages turned out to be that, with the match heading towards stoppage time, the players were taken off the pitch due to a thunderstorm. Final score, Nagano 2, Hachinohe 1. Comfortable enough for Parseiro, claiming their first win in 6. A disappointing display by Vanrare as they look to move on from the Masahiro Kuzuno era. All the action in Fujieda My FC against FC Imabari was in the first half, but a pulsating 45 minutes it turned out to be. Imabari went ahead in only the 3rd minute, big Tomoya Ando crashing home a header from a corner by Takuro Uehara, while My FC defenders Nobuyuki Kawashima and Keisuke Ogasawara were bumping into each other and ending up on the floor. Fujieda almost pulled level 15 minutes later, but Akiyuki Yokoyama's perfect arcing header from a Jun Suzuki free kick drew a sensational save from Shu Mogi on his Imabari debut. Marcus Indio was involved in 2 good chances for the visitors to extend their lead, first on a counter-attack when he fed Taisei Takase, whose shot was saved by Kei Uchiyama, then when a delicious 1-2 with Kazuki Nakagawa took him away from Takashiyama and threw on goal. But having done the hard bit, his shot was well off target. No goals yet in an Imabari shirt for Marcus Indio. His team did score again in the 43rd minute, Takatora Kondo setting up Nakagawa for a cross that Ogasawara headed decisively and unequivocally into his own net. Fujieda managed to put down the self-destruct button for long enough to pull one back almost immediately, Keigo Enomoto passing for Suzuki on the edge of the area to curl a shot against the far post, the loose ball falling for Tojiro Kubo to blast into the net. Final score, Fujieda 1, Imabari 2. My FC, undone by their defensive disorganisation, Imabari took what was handed to them and then kept the game quiet. Gainare Tottori moved away from the foot of the table, making it 2 wins in a row at home to Tegevajaro Miyazaki. The visitors' keeper Shunsuke Ueda was caught out for the opener on 15 minutes, way out of his goal as Ryuji Sawakami advanced into the Miyazaki half, spotted the opportunity and curled the ball into an empty net from 45 yards. Tigavajano started the second half brightly, Kenta Okuma having a shot tipped over by Koshiro Itohara, and then Kairi Shinbo having what would have been his first goal since 2020 chalked off for a handball that had helped him past Naoya Uozato. Gainare scored their second on the 51st minute when Hiroto Sete sent over a corner and captain Koki Ishii hit a first-time half volley that gave Ueda no chance. Miyazaki's best opportunity came on the hour, Takuma Sonada feeding Tomoya Kitamura, who found space between Junya Suzuki and Hibiki Nagai to get in the shot, well saved by Itohara. Uozato could have made it three for Gainare late on, but his 20-yard shot was tipped around the post by Ueda, and it ended Tottori 2, Miyazaki 0. Three games without conceding a goal now by Gainare, whose attacking threat is paying off. Tegavajano, conversely, are slipping down the table, having scored only one in the last five games. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 13. The top four teams are, moving back up to first, Kagoshima with 29 points, Iwaki a second with 28, then it's Matsumoto 25 and Toyama 25. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Kitakyushu in 15th with 11 points, Tottori also 11, Hachinohe with 10, and still at the bottom with 5, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to this weekend and round 14, with four games on Saturday the 25th. Leaders Kagoshima face a difficult trip to Ehime. Can Toyama break a club record with a sixth consecutive league win? They host Nagano. Tottori have the chance for a third straight win at home to the seemingly mojo-less Sagamihana. Can struggling YSCC pick up a second win of the year at home to Fujieda? Then on Sunday the 26th, no mistaking the game of the round, one of the matches of the season so far. Third against second, Matsumoto against Iwaki. Can Gifu continue their rise up the table via a trip to Miyazaki? There's a Tohoku derby between the Ryo Shigaki's Hachinohe and Fukushima. And there's a mid-table encounter at Imabari, where the visitors are Numazu. And at the Mikuni World Stadium, Kitakyushu play host to Sanuki. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.